advisement, and we proceed to the fifth case of the day, United States versus Gutierrez-Ruiz.
Good morning. May it please the court. Honorable members of this panel, counsel. My name is Jose Rojo, and I'm here representing the appellant, Jesus Gutierrez-Ruiz. I'm here to talk about the fallacies, the problems that we have in the criminal justice system. I am aware the court has already reviewed two cases prior to mine that have highlighted a couple of those problems. The problem I'm addressing today is the problem with the federal sentencing guidelines in the post-Booker Fanfan era, where the court and the Seventh Circuit has fashioned certain procedures that are allowing for these errors to be committed. The error I'm talking about is the clear error found by Judge Gatchell in the district court. Judge Gatchell found that, made a conclusion saying that a gun was not clearly improbably connected to the crime, to the offense at hand, which was conspiracy to distribute drugs. Talking about double negatives, the judge found this standard confusing. She admitted, the court admitted that she didn't know how to apply the standard. It was very confusing. It was a maybe, maybe not. And simply put, she said, you probably have to take this issue somewhere else. It was not the district court's fault, per se, the reason why the finding was erroneous. The procedures that had been developed after the Booker Fanfan cases by the Supreme Court are, to say the least, defeating the purpose of the substance of the law, the substantive opinion in Booker Fanfan. The courts in Spalladino and Dean and now recently my Katuk, I believe is the name of the case, has been sanctioning a procedure that establishes that a judge can make a finding and then impose a sentence, find the correct guideline calculation based on that finding by a preponderance of the evidence, and then from that standpoint go with the guideline and the federal sentencing guidelines, use that guideline to impose a sentence unless the defendant can rebut the reasonableness of that guideline calculation. The fallacy with that policy is that we are allowing the district court to impose a sentence that is not based on an admission by the defendant or in a finding made by a jury. That was the reason why Booker was decided the way it was decided. And Judge Posner eloquently in the decision that preceded the Booker Fanfan case in the Supreme Court, he put it that way, that in order for the government to seek an enhanced sentence, the sentence has to be based on a fact found either by a jury or admitted by the defendant. Now the court is making distinctions. Well, now the guidelines are advisory. The problem with the advisory guidelines and the label and now the discretion and the deference not given to those calculations is that we still have judges making findings. And based on those findings by proponents of the evidence without, in this particular case, without even live testimony to ascertain certain facts, we have those findings be used to increase or to establish someone's sentence. The problem in this case, one example, the judge said at the sentencing hearing that she didn't know really how to apply the enhancement and she was confused. But the problem was that she found no connection of this particular gun to the offense. At the same time, Judge Gatchell said, but then I have to put the burden on the defendant for him to show whether it's clearly improbable that the gun was connected to the offense. The facts of the case are simple, are clear. Mr. Gutierrez went into his house. He received a call from a co-defendant. He's a fugitive now, Mr. Medina. He called him to a restaurant to arrange for drugs to be unloaded, to be stored in his garage temporarily. Mr. Gutierrez agreed to have that done in his garage for in exchange of $2,000. He didn't know what amount of contraband, what kind of contraband. He didn't know any of those details. He was not a participant to that portion of the offense. They come into his garage, unload the drugs, and then take off. At that point, he is arrested. Later, during the search of his house, the police finds a gun inside the bedroom underneath the mattress. The gun was unloaded. There was a magazine next to it, but it was not placed in the gun. Now, the government is saying that the gun was connected to the offense. Of course, the judge rejected that because, as the judge stated on the record, there was nothing in this home that indicates that the gun was connected to the offense. None of the participants even talked about the handgun. No one carried a handgun. No one even mentioned anything relating to a handgun. Yet, the government claimed that because there were certain items in the house, found in the house, then therefore that gun must have been connected to the offense, and therefore the enhancement was justified. Well, that shifted the burden of proof on Mr. Gutierrez to prove a negative improbability. The judge engaged in speculation, saying, well, what are the possible scenarios that this gun could have been connected to this offense? The judge went ahead and figured out, well, that is impossible for the defense to prove that that was not possible. Are we to calculate every possible scenario and then negate it by another possible scenario? Nonetheless, do this all throughout just argument and not even live witnesses. The judge admitted that while this offense had nothing to do with the gun, that the items there could have been used. She figured that they could have been used for the offense. The government furthered the theory that a vacuum heat sealer, was used to pack cocaine. The cocaine that was unloaded in the garage was already packed. The government says, well, they're going to dilute it and then repack it. The government couldn't prove, number one, there was no residue of cocaine on the heat sealer. They couldn't prove how powder cocaine could be vacuumed through the heat sealer without being sucked out of the possible bag, and the government didn't prove that lactose, which is used as a vitamin supplement, could be used as a cutting agent to cut 150 kilos of cocaine. That was the contraband that was unloaded in this garage. The judge herself admitted, I've never seen cocaine. I don't know what it looks like. So there was no way the judge could have possibly made a finding that that substance was used to dilute cocaine. Number two, the judge admitted there's no way. I know it's not going to do me any good to see the vacuum sealer because I don't know the procedures in packaging cocaine. And those were the statements made by the judge. We do require other professionals, in other trades, we do require accuracy in our findings. If we go to a pharmacy, we require that a pharmacist makes judgments or makes accurate measurements in the medication that's going to go into a bottle, because that's going to affect human lives. That's going to affect possibly life, death, or it's going to affect health and safety of a person. The same thing for engineers. They're going to build a bridge. They're going to build a building. We require that they follow procedures and they put the materials required under the standards required by the trade. Yet, we allow these findings, so-called findings of fact, to establish sentences when the facts or when the findings are not accurately made. These sentences affect not just the defendant himself. They affect the family. They have people we have to answer to. These findings affect the life not just of the defendant, affect people surrounding those defendants. And yet we allow judges with a very we don't give them enough tools to make this type of findings. With the only finding that is allowed to be made or used to base a sentence is the finding made by a jury, or the findings of, or the facts admitted by the defendant in order to increase someone's sentence. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Littleton.
May it please the court, counsel. The judge correctly followed post-Booker sentencing procedures in this case. First, with regard to Mr. Rojo's argument about the court finding sentencing facts by preponderance of the evidence, the finding of sentencing facts by preponderance of the evidence, as well as presuming that a guideline sentence is reasonable, complies with Booker, as this court has held on numerous occasions. And we'll not go into that, but there are numerous cases which hold that that is appropriate, which is exactly what this court did. With regard to 2D1.1B1, which is the gun enhancement that is at issue in this case, Judge Gottschall, as is clear from the record, understood what was required in order to find that that enhancement applies. And she took some time, in fact, and broke for recess to think about it. She concluded correctly that the government bore the burden of proving that the defendant possessed the firearm. And once that was proven, then the burden shifted to the defendant to prove that it was clearly improbable that that firearm was connected to the offense.
Why isn't it problematic that the district court stated there was no evidence that anyone in the conspiracy had a gun or had used a gun? That's one of the arguments counsel's putting forth.
Because, Your Honor, the basic facts is this was a controlled delivery, and much of what happened was recorded by the confidential informant. During those recordings, never was a gun discussed at all, and I think that's the reason why Judge Gottschall made that statement. She did not, however, make that statement with regard to the totality of the circumstances here. Once the defendant's residence was searched, inside of the residence, there was not only a gun, there was a Glock box, ammunition, in fact, a magazine and ammunition for a second weapon, as well as drug paraphernalia, lactose, which is a common cutting agent for cocaine, heat sealers, scales, and wrapping for packaging of cocaine. So in saying that, as she said, as she was sort of working her way through the analysis, that there was no one was discussing a gun. A gun had never been discussed over the body recordings. It was not until after the search occurred and the gun was found in addition or with the drug paraphernalia, which clearly would show a distribution or an intent to distribute. I think that is when she was able to conclude that it was not clearly improbable that the gun was connected to the offense. Because, again, here, the offense was conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute cocaine. And the drug paraphernalia that was found within the home was connected to or was part of that distribution process, the process of cutting, breaking down the cocaine, and repackaging it for further distribution.
Even though, according to the evidence, that wasn't supposed to occur at that location.
Yes, Judge. But what is also supported by the evidence is that, and as is shown from the body recording, when Mr. Gutierrez, the defendant, was in his garage unloading the cocaine with a confidential informant, there are numerous discussions where Mr. Gutierrez is clearly evidencing the fact that he has engaged in this repeatedly on more than one occasion. So I think that also formed the basis for the judge concluding that it was not clearly improbable that this firearm was connected to the offense. And again, the paraphernalia that was found inside of the residence is in fact basically the items that are used, as numerous judicial decisions have found, items that are used in the course of distribution of cocaine, the cutting down and the repackaging. In addition, the pre-sentence report also noted that heat sealers were used in the packaging of narcotics. And in addition, both sides referred to the testimony of the expert at the co-defendant's trial. And then just finally on this issue, the burden shifted to the defendant at this point to prove that it was clearly improbable that the gun was connected to the offense. If there was a concern that the paraphernalia, as the government had put it forward to the district court, was not in fact used or could not have been used to distribute cocaine, then the burden was on the defendant to raise that issue and to bring forward some testimony that would have contradicted the evidence that the government put forward. And for those reasons and for all the reasons stated in the government's brief, the government would request that this court affirm the defendant's sentence.
Okay.
Got 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. A statement that was made by counsel is troubling. Something that did not happen in that court is live testimony. If the government wanted to put forward evidence to say that was drug paraphernalia, in fact, there was no testimony to that effect, and I would have been entitled to cross-examine that witness and to that fact. My client offered the judge, if you're still confused, I can put my client on the stand, and he can clear up any doubts that you have. The judge denied that request. She said she had had enough, and that was going to be the ruling. At a very minimum, in order to comply with the mandate of 3553, the section that's not mandated by the Supreme Court's ruling, in order to comply with the very minimum, we're required to have a clear finding, a clear statement as to why the sentence is what it is, and it has to be, the sentence has a cap, has to be no more than necessary to comply with the subservient purposes of the same statute, that, you know, respect for the law is observed, and the retribution is the accurate retribution, so on and so forth. At a very minimum, my client is entitled to be heard on testimony to clear those doubts in the judge's mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement. Last case.